Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the
Hey,
Brothers
everybody,
Wiss.
This
Let's
is
take a
Greg
ride through space
with
on this
Brothers Wiss number 82. I had to pause and look over because I'd forgot which number it was. I am all the way from Texas, the only warm place in America, it seems, right now. Thrift, where are you out of? I always forget.
But I'm in Brisbane, which is in Queensland, Australia.
Right. So it's, the last time we talked to you, were you in Australia yet? I don't think you were. Were you?
I've been here for almost a year now, so yeah, I was here.
All right. That's my subtle way of saying I feel like you've forgotten us.
I haven't forgotten
you.
You know,
like us?
Just been busy, you know, resettling into a new country, that sort of thing.
Sure, sure, yeah. All right, Dave, we got Dave right here below me. Dave, where are you out of?
I'm out of L.A., Los Angeles, California. And it is warm here, by the way, but it is rainy.
It's warm here, too, dude. It's like 70 today. It feels great. Hey, Nick, what's it like in your part of the woods?
It's actually okay now. It's 38 right now, surprisingly.
Oh, just 38. Okay.
Yeah.
Negative 50. I was reading an article that like up north up there in your area, that parts of your area were colder than parts of Antarctica this week. It was looking pretty bananas.
There was a few people that actually died in the Chicago area from the cold.
Jeez.
Pretty brutal.
I was wondering what like all of the homeless people were gonna do, you know? It's like
die. What else can they do?
I have no idea.
Chicago ain't too friendly to the homeless.
All huddle together for warmth.
Like penguins.
Like fire ants. Have you ever seen fire ants in a flood? They all ball together. They all hang out. And the outside ones die, but the inside ones live. So
oof,
it's those outside hobos that would give their life to save the hobos on the inside. Wow, that took a turn. Anyway. All right. So we have a sponsor, and I'm pointing at him right there. Pennytone. Pennytone is sponsoring this cast. It is the easy button for delivering VoIP services to your business customers. They provide all the features you expect with the reliability and care you deserve. That sounds like a jingle. Dave's running a special this month, right, Dave? About call centers looking for SIP trunks?
That's right.
What's the story, man?
So any call center that's looking for a low-cost SIP trunk, I'm offering 0.0015 per minute for just local and long-distance calls. And for toll-free calls, I'm offering 0.01. What did I write on there?
0.012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, per minute. And just give me a buzz, and we'll set you up.
Oh, yeah. Terms and conditions always apply on these things, so call.
Yeah, I mean, I want a minimum number of minutes, you know. So, I mean, if you're going to do 10 minutes, you know, come on.
And your number is 855-PENNYTONE, right?
That's right. 855-PENNYTONE.
That's so cute. All right. So let's jump into some of the funky stuff. I've got number one, the Microtik newsletter. I think I put 82, but I think it's 87. It's newsletter 87 came out, correct?
Yep.
So Thrift, you are the smartest guy I know. So especially when it comes to the Microtik hardware, chipset choices. And when we get down below, I've quoted you on a lot of things. So why don't we just let you get started on this?
There's a few interesting things in this one. So there's another Series 3 series switch, which is...
What happened to him?
Interesting.
Anticipation, please.
Wow. He paused at the best part.
He's mastered the art of the dramatic pause. For any of you...
That's I think Steve Colbert calls that the dog looking at himself in the mirror look. You know, he's like...
lost in contemplation. I get lost in my own eyes sometimes as well. Anyway,
I get lost.
We've had him enough. It's the perhaps he'll come back to us. I bet his computer crashed. He's talking
That's
about
awesome.
The CRS309-1G-8S+IN. I almost said dash, but it's a plus IN. So it's a 8-port SFP plus guy, right? Looks like it's got one copper gig. I guess that's going to be kind of your management, and it's got a DB9 console port. I really wish they would just stick with one form factor for the console ports. That being the, I like the plug-in, like, RJ45 port. I don't know about you guys, but it's kind of one of my faves.
So yeah, this... I've got a stack of them at home still from Cisco stuff.
I know.
That's nice. Other vendors use it.
Yeah, it's so much, I don't know. I just don't like carrying those big, fat serial cables around anymore. But the Switch is dual core, 800 meg CPU, 512 megs of RAM. PoE input on it. Grounding terminal capable of dual boot. I just don't know why they bother with that. I mean, you're just going to run router OS on this thing. You're not running Switch OS. Nobody does. Its form factor is kind of interesting. It's got a big fat aluminum heatsink on the back, but it doesn't look... So they've got this rack mount addition to it that extends out almost the same length of the chassis. It doesn't look like you could fit two of these side by side in a 19U. I can't really tell, but it's pretty close.
Just want to point out, wouldn't it be kind of awkward if it was just you and I and Nick wasn't here?
No, I don't know. Nick definitely looks like a pirate today. I instantly was thinking very Johnny Depp of you.
I've been stuck in town here for the last week, so the snow and everything.
Hey, our friend Thrift came back.
Thanks for the skin update. Thank you.
Sweet action. So we sort of just talked about the quick and dirty, the number of ports, that it's SFP plus. It says up to SFP plus, so I'm guessing you could just stick a regular SFP in this, in the rando ports. Does that sound right?
Yeah, you definitely can. It's probably going to have the same compatibility issues that people have been having on the other CRS 3 series models. So a few people have been having issues with DAC cables, you know, the ones that have got the SFPs molded onto each end. But for the most part, I think MikroTik have fixed those. It's just the odd one or two that still don't work. But yeah, pretty cool little product. It's just a continuation of what we've already got though.
So this thing, now, I was musing over the idea, could you fit two of these side by side in a 19U rack? I don't think you can you?
No, it's about 2 millimeters too wide on each unit to do that. Right. There's not much of...
Damn. You actually measured that. That's pretty cool.
No, I put them side to side, and I used the micrometer to see that it was slightly too wide.
Oh, man. All right.
Of course
you did. By the way, MikroTik fixed it. Was this a hardware problem, or is it just fixed with like some software OS update?
Software updates.
Yeah, Nick and I ran into that issue, and it was not fun. And returning the routers was not fun either.
You had actual physical damage to yours, though. It was rattling when you shook the Switch.
It was pretty wild. And I'm like, whatever, we got to use it.
That could be problematic. Yeah. And they're saying this thing street price about $270 US.
It's pretty reasonable.
That is pretty reasonable for as many 10 gig ports as you're getting on this guy. And you were talking about compatibility with DAC cables. In this, they also have an active direct attached 5 millimeter cable. So it looks like... kind of like a DAC cable, but they're using optics, right?
That's right. So you get that optical isolation between the equipment, and no chance of one piece of gear blowing up another piece of gear. But yeah, I was quite surprised to see that product, actually.
Yeah, and this guy's coming in at $50. So of course, as soon as I said it was 50, Mike looks it up on Fiverr Store, and it's $10 cheaper over there or whatever. But you know how it is. But they're also saying that it's compatible across all series of switches, so you're not going to run into the DAC compatibility issues.
Correct. Do you know if you buy it from MikroTik that it's going to work in all of their products?
Well, they were saying that the DAC cable didn't necessarily work in everything, right? But yeah, this optical one will.
Well, we had an issue with the optical, but I think they've corrected that problem since.
That's what you get for being on the bleeding edge, man. You early adopters.
Bleeding edge. Well, it's out for production. How could it be bleeding edge if it's already like for sale to the public?
Because you need to let everybody else find the problems, fix them, and then you buy it. That's how it works.
Greg, you know, it's okay when it's okay when I'm right. It's okay. It's okay to let me be right.
Yeah, you could absolutely find all the problems and then help them get fixed, and then I will buy it. The product.
My only response is I love you.
Okay. At least somebody does. You and my grandma. They've also got on this guy the WAP 60G X3. So it's 60 gig I guess it's really made for point to multipoint, right? Because it's got a 180 degree coverage on a 60 gig radio, which that's not very common, right? I mean, that seems uncommon.
It's got a single radio in it, but it's got three antenna arrays, so you can still only have up to 8 client devices off it. It's just that they can be spread over that 180 degrees instead of the previous, what was it, 60 degrees of the last one?
Yeah, I mean, the WAP? WAP, I think, was I don't know. I thought it was 120.
No, I don't think it was nearly so wide.
I think it was only 60, the original one.
Yeah, that sounds right. But who was it? I guess in the Slack we were kind of musing over, does this mean it's going to open it up to more interference? And then, again, the idea that 60 gig, it's not going to go far anyway. So the odds of somebody interfering with your really wide 180 degree AP is probably not really going to be a problem for you. Anything else in here that you found particularly interesting? There's the Intercell LTE stuff that came out that we haven't seen yet. And of course, Mike instantly looks it up and decides that it doesn't have the bands for the U.S., so it's dead to him. I think, didn't Microtik say that they've sort of developed it for specific regions right out of the box or something like that?
No, I haven't heard anything like that. I did hear that it was a resold product that Microtik are testing the market with to see what the market wants and how it reacts to the product, and then they're going to continue development on it and make more variations based on the feedback. So if you like the look of it, give them your feedback.
Daddy.
Another member of the podcast here.
Junior member. Does this, I mean, price-wise, I've never done any of the LTE stuff, so I don't even know how this stacks up comparatively price-wise, feature, and I mean, it's not going to run Router OS, right? It's going to be something else.
Yeah. So no, it doesn't run Router OS. It runs, I think it's Intercell OS or something like that, something different, completely different. It's just going to be a whole different kettle of fish. I haven't looked at it yet. The pricing looks pretty similar to buy sells. And I'm sure it's similar to the other vendors that play in this space, but I guess until it gets out there and people test it, we're not going to know much about it because it's all completely new.
All right. So something else you posted up, Thrifty, because a lot of the stuff I like tends to come from you anyway because it's more technical. You said Intel may be purchasing Mellanox. Is that problematic for you?
I wouldn't say it's problematic, but I mean, most people won't know why this is relevant, but the Microtik CCRs are based on what's called a Tilera processor, or Tile processor, that was created by a company called Tilera. And it's completely proprietary architecture. It's kind of halfway between PowerPC and MIPS. It's a very strange architecture, but Microtik decided to use that. And it was a great idea at the time, but since then, Tilera was purchased by a company called EasyChip. Now, EasyChip make the big network processors that are in Cisco ASR 9000 routers and in a lot of Juniper MX routers. So they probably saw it as a way to broaden their horizons. And then about 6 months later, EasyChip were purchased by the huge Israeli company Mellanox. And Mellanox are well known for InfiniBand. And they basically used the Tilera intellectual property to create a massively multi-core processor to go into storage arrays, and it's got their InfiniBand built into it. And unfortunately, when they did that, they pretty much dropped all support for the classic Tilera processors that are used in the Microtik CCRs. So I believe they're still providing a little bit of support, but not like they were when it was fully Tilera. And now Intel are coming along, sniffing around, looking to buy Mellanox to get hold of InfiniBand intellectual property. So it's just getting buried further and further back within these big companies, and it's not that inspiring, to be honest. As far as the Tilera products from Microtik and how well they're going to be supported and what Microtik are going to be able to do with them longer term.
Gotcha. So when you look in your crystal ball, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, it can't be much worse than it is now, I guess. yeah, I don't know. It kind of doesn't bode well with me for the future role for the CCR products. The current ones with the Tolera chipsets, I'm not sure if they're going to be stuck on a particular kernel version or what's going to happen there. I mean, I'm not on the inside as a customer of Tolera's and of Mellanox's to know what they are and aren't giving their customers. But yeah, it's not looking too promising. Mm.
So it could be the death knell for the Tolera stuff, huh?
It could be the death knell for the Tolera stuff. Yeah. All right.
Well, I'll hold my breath and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, these things are just rumors. I've heard other huge rumors before, like the Nokia buying Juniper one and other crazy ones that have just never eventuated. So this could be nothing.
Hmm. For sure, for sure. All right, so DNS Flag Day was yesterday. Anybody feel anything from that?
Why don't you tell me what the hell DNS Flag Day is?
All right, so fuck? I'll give you my rough understanding. I think there was some unnecessarily slow and inefficient old accommodations for old DNS systems, and the idea was to just shutter some of those, and that was going to be Flag Day. So a lot of major services, I guess, were going to start turning off those old features, and theoretically it could be bad if you weren't ready for it DNS wise. I'm not super great at that stuff. I know if you go to dnsflagday.net, there's a little tester on their thing, and so I tested my servers and they were a-okay, so I was like, okay, that's as far as I need to go with it. So I didn't really put a lot of effort or energy. I was just curious if anybody actually saw any fallout from Flag Day. I didn't see anything.
So what, again, this is basically a lot of companies hosting DNS servers or ISPs hosting DNS servers had turned off certain old DNS features.
Yeah, it was a list of DNS providers agreed to coordinate removing accommodations for non-compliant DNS implementations from their software or services on or around February 1st, 2019. So yesterday. I didn't see any fallout. I was just curious if anybody else did. Seemed like it came and went quietly, right?
Yeah, nothing broke. We don't need to worry about it.
That's kind of the way I looked at it. Nobody called me, so I'm going to move on to the next thing. All right. Fair enough. It's just a point of interest, I guess. Another quick note. John Osman was nice enough to record a 5-tip video and put it up. So anybody who hasn't done it, send me your 5 tips. Let's get on a video. Let's talk about it. Moving right along, looking at you guys that haven't done it. I'm staring at two guys that haven't done it, at least.
I only have like 3 tips.
I know. Oh, I ignored you.
I'm trying to the fifth.
When I meant two guys, I wasn't looking at you, Dave. Don't worry.
Thanks.
Ubiquity Discovery service DOS attack. Chris A. popped this one up. This actually sort of smells familiar. Something about UDP port 10,001, I think, that people have been able to DOS the Ubiquity kit. Does that sound right?
I heard about that, and I also heard about Cisco also got nailed. Let me try to find that.
Yeah, there was also a link posted to somebody that did a report on that vulnerability, and they found, like, I don't want to misquote it, but there was at least tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of devices that they were able to scan and identify they were Ubiquity devices. So that's pretty huge. I want to see if I can find the stats.
It's fairly significant, yeah. It says Ubiquity's acknowledged the issue and has released a workaround, is in the process of putting together an official fix. That was on the 29th, so that was a few days ago.
Yeah, actually, I saw something kind of related in with Cisco. It showed up in my feed that Cisco's, the RV series, you know, the small, medium business, like really, they're really small routers.
The Linksys is.
I didn't see it about a Linksys, but it's right here on Cisco's website. If you go to their Cisco Security Advisories and Alerts, so on January 30th, they had a high vulnerability report, something with Cisco WebEx network recording players. Okay, so forget about that. But
WebEx.
On February 1st, they also had multiple Cisco Unified Communications products reflect cross-site scripting vulnerability. But actually, the one that showed up in my feed was on January 25th. That's right here. It's quite a few vulnerabilities, you know, on this website over here, and it set the vulnerability is set to high. So yeah, I guess, you know what? No company is really immune to any type of vulnerability. Yeah. The important thing is that they correct it pretty quick. You know, they inform the users or end users, and they correct it quickly.
Yeah, I'm looking at this article, and it says around 500,000 Ubiquiti devices discovered. So that's fairly significant. I think it says half of them are in Brazil for some reason, and then large chunks in U.S., Spain, and elsewhere.
Yeah, 486,000 unique MAC addresses were identified, and they have a breakdown per product approximately. But it's like they said it's like a 30 to 35 times amplification factor. And
oof. Yeah. That's bad.
So they approximated it could do like a terabit per second of denial of service just off that. Yeah, someone in the Little Brother Slack named Chris posted an article with like a breakdown. But a bunch of people were complaining because some vendors use that port for NAT traversal. So Ubiquiti's solution was to block it. Yeah. But that's a problem for some people because they use that port for some NAT traversal for other vendors for IPsec.
10,001 UDP.
So,
yeah.
Well, I guess if you're not a Ubiquiti shop, maybe you don't have to worry so much about it.
Yeah. That's pretty big numbers, though, for equipment that's just out there.
So was the vulnerability in a piece of software that Ubiquiti have written, or is it in just a general part of the operating system that they're running?
Well, it's part of their discovery protocol, which I'm assuming they use for their software stack. So it'll discover Ubiquiti devices. And it's just like a small UDP payload they send to the equipment. The equipment responds with like IP address, MAC address, model, and stuff for them to onboard it into the software. So if you use like the phone app or the UNMS software, it uses this port to discover the devices to manage them. But as far as they could tell, you can't get administrative access into the device. It's just that if you send this little tiny payload, you get a big chunk of data back. So they're using it to attack, or I don't know if they've actually seen denial of service attacks. They just know the potential's there.
Oh, because it's UDP, you could theoretically spoof the source and have it go back.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
There's a new one of these every few months.
Yeah. Happens to the best of them.
It does.
Right. Can I ask a question? Why would you even have that service running on any Ubiquiti device that's internet facing?
It's probably on by default. Or
turn it off. God damn it.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's probably not a software settable thing, is it?
But part of the issue too is it's not exclusively like from the internet in. A lot of times it's customers that get something on their computer and they can scan the ISP network if it's not all segmented. So it's probably not internet attackers, it's probably guest machines that are using that port. I know I had a couple customers that I helped with firewalling because they had a customer that uses Ubiquiti stuff on their enterprise site. And they opened the app, and they were able to discover a couple hundred subscriber modules of other people. And they reported it to their wireless ISP, and they actually shut their service off.
This is how we say thank you. Back. You're shut down.
Apparently, this is an issue for some smaller wireless providers.
I can imagine. But, I can imagine.
With the bridge networks.
Yeah.
That's always fun. All right, let's talk about some more hardware stuff. These are the Slack updates. And again, this is 90% thrift, so it's good that you're here anyway. you put in that the CRS 300 series switches might be acting as port extenders for the CCRs in the near future.
So I heard a rumor that Microtech are working on enabling the CRS 3 series, so the new Marvell-based switches, to act as port extenders off of the CCRs and possibly other MicroTik platforms. But effectively, it uses a protocol called 802.1BR, and they literally appear as local ports on the CCR, even though they're in a remote switch chassis. So what that means is you could have a CCR 1072 that's only got 10 gig ports, and you could plug a CRS 326 into it, for example, and you'll now have 24 gigabit ports on your CCR 1072 that appear locally. So this is a feature that Nokia and Juniper and Cisco and various other vendors have used for years and years. So it's really good to see Microtech doing that. It simplifies the overall management of a solution and allows you to, deliver different port types on a product that might not have them.
That's baller. Do you think you'd be able to, say you had two of these CRSs hooked to the same 1072, do you think you could do a lag across the two different switches?
You definitely can. I don't know what Microtech is going to do in their implementation, but I know in the Nokias and Junipers, you definitely can.
All right. I was just going to ask, is this anything like stacking?
It's not like stacking. Not quite. You could probably do a pseudo stack with it. It's different.
Yeah, just a little bit. But that transitions right into Thrift was talking about emailing Microtech support for MC lag. The CRS 300 series, right?
That's right. So a lot of people might not know what multi-chassis lag is. What multi-chassis lag is it allows you to have two completely separate switches. So they're running a separate OS, they're not stacked, and they have a link between them, and then you can then create a lag from both of those switches to another device. So that might be a VMware host or a Proxmox host, or it could be another piece of equipment. And the big benefit of this is that those switches are completely separate. You can update the software on them in isolation without the other one going down and without any risk. If there's a software bug that affects one, it won't affect the other. So it's really good in carrier environments and in enterprise environments to get redundancy and minimize the risk. I mean, I've done a lot with stacking over the years with Cisco and Juniper and Extreme, and you always get those cases where you need to do a in-service software upgrade and it reboots the entire stack and then everything goes down, whereas with a multi-chassis lag, that can't happen. Yeah. So, yeah.
Or I've seen somebody accidentally unplug one of the stack cables and the whole stack freaks out. So it's just sort of... Because we've always sort of struggled with that in the data center environment, right? It's for convenience sake, if you stack it all, it's one management IP you connect to, and it looks like one giant device, right? So it's very convenient. You get the multi-chassis lag by default. All that stuff's built in there. And I've seen some, too, like with Cisco Kit, if you stack them through specialized stack cables and their PoE switches, they can actually borrow power from adjacent switches to help PoE power stuff, right?
That's so cool.
You can actually steal a little from the other guy, which I think is pretty neat, but there is that inherent danger because anybody who's worked with stacks enough, they know you're going to hit weird problems, right? You're going to hit oddities. What happens if you hit a stacking bug, which Cisco in their early days were notorious for? You know? So it's how do you provide 100% SLA when you can't necessarily trust those chassis, wherein if you actually keep them as separate as possible, it just it makes me feel a little better. I know people complain about the additional administrative overhead, right, of having multiple devices, but in the end, if it costs me 5 more minutes and, you know, to configure a new customer or anything like that, and in the end I get, you know, a switch fails over here and the customers never see it, I think it's totally worth it. It's very justified in those scenarios.
Definitely is. And, I mean, in this day and age, you can automate it, Greg, with a Python script or...
absolutely. Yeah. Well, sometimes it's like if you provision something once every 2 weeks and it takes you a total of 3 minutes, it's like, how hard do I really want to try and automate this? Yeah. You know, if it's something that's just so simple and you almost never do it, it's like, I don't know. I could watch this video of cats instead. You know, there's plenty. I could watch Twitch. Man, I have been super on this chess. I've been going down this chess black hole on Twitch. I know that's neither here nor there, but I've been watching. Dude, it's you're making that face. I think watching anybody who's amazingly talented at what they do is it's very. I think it can be entertaining.
Look, one of my very good friends, actually the guy that married us, He's very involved with chess.
We're married.
What?
We're married.
What?
Yeah. No, Dave and I are married. Duh.
No.
Get on my level.
He was the guy that married my wife and I, because he has a marriage license of some sorts. Anyway, ex-NASA, JPL employee, physicist, and he's very involved in that. And I went to one of these tournaments, and it's pretty exciting. But, you know, when the guys there are so amazing that it's very intimidating, and you feel like a schmuck. So I just walked out. I was like, whoa, these guys are at a totally different level.
See, I wouldn't want to go to a chess tournament. See, for me, the thing is, when you're watching people play online, especially like bullet chess, they're running their mouth nonstop. So they're talking about their theory. They're talking about what they're thinking, you know. Whereas if you go to a tournament, they're obviously not saying anything because, you know, they don't want to give anything away. So it's a much different experience to watch these guys say, well, I could do this, 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 and then they'll do, you know what I mean? And they're rattling that stuff off so bizarrely fast that it's like, how does your brain even work like that? It kind of trips me up.
Apparently, being friends with this guy who's very involved with chess, apparently you learn a really strange little fact that the most books written about any, I guess they consider it a sport, is chess. Historically, more books have been written about chess than any other game or sport ever. Very strange.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense because a lot of it's theory. I heard a grandmaster talking about there's no new openings being created in chess. It's like everything that's going to be a standard opening that's quality has already been done. So, you know, you just study what's already been put out there. But
that's why you got to play Go instead of chess.
Remember when Kasparov had to play against the Intel computer? Who remembers that? Remember Kasparov?
I'm not playing against Intel. I don't know what you're talking about.
Did you play against, was it IBM Watson or something?
Anyway, yeah, it was IBM. I'm sorry. I thought it was Intel. Yeah, it was IBM. And I forgot who won. Who won?
I can't remember either.
I think at this point the computers won. And then I saw how Google's AI engine just played some people at StarCraft 2. And it beat them 10 out of 11 games, I think. So computers
are... That's not fair.
Starting to...
How could you compete with a computer? That's not fair.
Unlimited actions per minute.
Yeah. It's not fair.
Well, they were saying something about how their strategy was... I mean, the strategy the computer used was one thing, but the precision of all their moves is what really undid them. That it was just obviously inhumanly precise on all movements and actions. So,
that's impressive that they lost the game, though.
Well, there's only one scenario where I've seen a human beat a computer. It's Star Trek: The Next Generation. Picard takes control when he's going through the asteroid field, even though the computer said it was impossible to get out just on impulse engines.
No, dude.
Picard uses the gravity of one asteroid to slingshot him out.
What was that movie where they went and blew up the asteroid? Was that Deep Impact or something?
Remember they went into
manual and they flew the shuttle back, dude? Where are you at?
What is that? With Aerosmith's song?
Anyway,
what was that?
Yeah, that was weird. Oh, that was so weird because they played the Aerosmith song and Aerosmith's daughter is Liv Tyler, and it was the scene where it was like her...
She's making out to Daddy's song.
Yeah. I was awful. That's awful. Inappropriately awkward. But bringing it all the way back around to Thrift's point that brought the whole thing up is email Microtik about your suggestions if you want a thing. So it's funny because he said, hey, email support. So a ton of people emailed support and they started hitting back with said answers saying, hey, we're working on this. And you said that some of their hardware platforms now are rather direct result of customer feedback, right?
That's right. So in one of their January product updates, not the newsletter, but they announced a whole lot of products that are going to be shipping soon. And one of them is a 24x10 gig port switch with two 40 gig uplinks. I can't remember the model number. But that was as feedback from, I think there was a 36 or 33 port 10 gig switch that had no 40 gig uplinks, which was kind of useless, but customers told them that and they realized that without the 40 gig uplinks, it's pointless, and they changed the design, and yeah, it's going to be a good switch.
So why 40 gig instead of 100 gig?
I'm guessing that's a chipset limitation.
Oh.
Yeah. Because 40 gig is just 4x10 gig, so they can use the existing stuff in the chipset, whereas to go to 100 gig, that's 4 times 25 gigs, so they need a different generation of chipset to do that.
I'm so you're glad you're here, because I would speculate and have no idea.
Light up your smoke.
All right, so let's see. Thomas Kernack found a smoking deal on hosted servers from Scaleway. He's getting like 2.4 gig CPUs, 42 gigs of RAM, 400 gig SSD. It's like $75 a month.
Yeah, I don't trust it.
Well, I think he's really using it for testing for Unimus. I think he's using it to like simulate like 15,000 routers all hitting Unimus at once or something like that. So he's using it to stress test his software.
But he told me he wrote a script that does something, like he did something very clever to test that.
Yeah, and I think you have to have enough horsepower to be able to crank all that crap up and have it go. So I think that's what he's doing.
I don't trust it.
It looks awesome, but they only have, like, look, on their website, there's 4 data centers in France and then 1 in the Netherlands and Amsterdam.
Yeah, that fool's over in Slovakia. So it may not...
nothing in the U.S.
Yeah, it may not be, like, super good deal for us. But I guess it's just a VPS, right? You could probably find an equivalent one. Let's see. Thomas still hates Nginx web server. How do you say that?
Nginx.
Nginx. I don't know. Okay. I've seen it a million times, and I actually... our website's run off of it, but a buddy of mine sets it up and takes care of all of it, so I don't have to know how that stuff works.
I like it more than Apache, but I don't have to do anything special with modifying headers. Usually I'm just hitting the default Nginx config, redirecting to HTTPS, and then just having different domains. But he probably needed extra stuff, extra header modifications, but I think he figured it out. He just said the documentation's not that great.
I think he said there were multiple ways of doing everything, and then there's caveats within each one.
But I've added functionality and deprecated old stuff, but it's not really documented very well.
All I know is Apache, you can install WebBin and then configure it very easily. So it's like idiot button. Like for me, I can just clicky-click things and it magics. So
The purists are going to kill you just for that comment.
I don't know. WebBin. Maybe. I think a lot of life is triage in IT, right? Just... get it done as quick as I can and then get out of there. I know it's running fat and it's using too much RAM and stuff, but it gets it done, you know, and I don't have to think about it anymore. And if they wanted it done right, they would have hired somebody smarter than me, obviously. So there you go. It's their own fault. They have no one to blame but themselves. There you go. Let's see. Anything else interesting in here? Josh started a code channel, which I assume is him volunteering to do everybody's scripts. So go in there and make him do your stuff. Conferences is lighting up.
Wait, Josh who?
I can't remember his last name.
Finlay.
Starts with an F?
Yeah. It says Josh Finlay.
There you go. He's an Aussie.
Yeah, thanks. He is. He's local.
He's local. Is he actually in Brisbane or is he?
He is in Brisbane. Yeah, I've met him a couple of times.
He is local then. Small world. That's crazy. All right. Rock and
definitely
roll.
Is.
And he's a big fan of Dave, so you super got to question his judgment as well as his sanity.
Oh, come on. Cool. I thought I was going to get some love, and I got some shade.
Goodness.
Yeah, he emailed me.
Anyway, the conferences channel's heating up because the Mum Austin's coming. Right now, the only people on the agenda list are people from the Brothers Wisp and stuff. So I think that's kind of baller. We're going to do the AMA again, the hour-long AMA, which I think is fun. We have to pick sort of a topic. So I say routing every time, but we never talk about routing. It's whatever questions just kind of come at you, which I think is better. You know, it gives people an opportunity to really not be locked into a single thing in voice. Every time people ask us about when's MicroTik going to do this or that, you have to always preface it with, I'm not an employee. I don't know these things.
Sorry.
But they still
as are. As they watch from the back.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Seeing what you're going to say.
Just out of curiosity. Should we just make stuff up? Should we just say, look, if you ask us about anything MicroTik internal, we're just going to make it up on the spot. Seamlessly. You'll have no idea. So.
I love that. I love that idea.
We sort of talking about your everyday carry pocket tool. I'm a Leatherman guy. So 2002, I'm graduating college and literally paying for gas with pocket change. And I buy a Leatherman Wave, and it was $60, which was like a fortune to me back then. Because back then, my wife and I would get one burrito and cut it in half. You know, I mean, it was like we were that kind of broke. And I still carry that same Leatherman like every day, and it's been
let's see it
so good.
Where is it?
I have it in the living room right now. But this is the new toy I've gotten. It's the Maker Knife. It was made by Jaico, and it's got
what do you do with that hole?
Killer action. You you just slide your finger there and you blop it out.
Oh snap!
But it's crazy. Look. It's like super locked, flexible. But all you have to do is just put your finger in there and it comes loose and it doesn't like rattle out. But it is the most satisfying knife I've ever. Look at that. I just for like hours, I sit here, I spin it like that. And then I'm just like blopping it out. And then I'll start doing this and I'll become unconscious with it. And my wife will start like waving her arms. She's like, I'm just going to see if you'd stab me. It's like, what is wrong with you? Are you crazy person? I'm not conscious of what I'm doing over here. Stop that. But, yeah, so Leatherman, I've been carrying that for the last forever. And then I just love playing with this so much that I think I will continue to carry it. I'm just looking for any excuse to use it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, like, shaving the edge off of everything. But what do you guys, I think, isn't it harder to everyday carry in Australia, thrift?
Yeah, there's a lot of laws here. You can carry like a small Leatherman and things like that, but any larger knives are illegal in Australia. Yeah, any flick knives, anything that can be, kind of automatically pushed out with a spring is illegal. Yeah.
You know what vision comes to my head when you just told me that no large knives? I'm thinking of the Crocodile Dundee scene. Come on. That's
not a knife. Not everybody is walking around with a machete.
A small sword, yeah.
Cool. Well, I don't carry anything with me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't carry shit. What do I need? I carry a little stupid screwdriver. You know, the kind that it's on both ends. It's really tiny. It looks like a pen. Just in case. You never know when you have to unscrew something.
Gotcha.
It reminds me of that joke from My Blue Heaven. Oh, God. I shouldn't even say it here.
All right. Well, good. Then don't.
It was a PG-13 movie, but whatever.
That's questioning it.
Nick, do you everyday carry something?
A lot of tech stuff, but I do also have a knife that I carry on me every day. Pretty nice. It's got like a little spring lock up here. Fold it. But most of my stuff's tech related.
Gotcha. I also carry a little flashlight in my pocket. I used to just use my cell phone flashlight, and then when I started doing that project for the Grizzlies, you know, I was crawling underneath you know, like the stadium stuff, the stairs, just all kinds of places. And it's just, man, it wouldn't cut it. So just one of those little pocket flashlights that hold a, like one AA battery, you know, that's killing.
Oh yeah. The keychain flashlights. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit that's bigger cool. than that. Yeah. So that's kind of my everyday carry, a Leatherman and a flashlight. That's it. Goes a long way. Anyway, let's see. Bostjan was talking about what console to get for his kids. He said he's never played video games, which kind of boggles the mind.
Who is this?
Bostjan. he's actually been getting a little bit more active in the. It's spelled B O S with like a schwa over the top or something.
Schwa.
T J A N.
Wait, and he never played a video game.
I know, right? It's trippy. But he's trying to figure out what console to get for his kids.
I don't believe him. You can't. There's no way not to play a video game today. If you have a stupid phone in your pocket, a smartphone, you can play a plethora of video games. Mm. I just don't believe it.
Mm. But some people don't.
I don't. Honestly, I don't play video games.
I don't play them anymore. The last video game,
I never did. I was at a very short period of time in life addicted to Halo, and I sucked at it, and I still loved it, and I still played it like 10 hours a day. But... I mean, come on. There's no way not to play a video game, and I hate video games.
I remember we used to have those early generation Blackberries. That was like my first
Snake
smartphone. No, Snake. Used to play Brick Breaker, and so whenever you had to go take a dump, you'd say, "I'm gonna go break some bricks." And you just sit there and you play Brick Breaker on the toilet. I remember that. It was hilarious.
God, who remembers like the batch file games like gorilla.bass. We're going way back. There was one
called Alleycat. I remember that. So you do a lot of retro game stuff, Thrift?
Yeah, I've got a lot of retro gaming stuff, like old Nintendo 64, Super Nintendos, what was called the Genesis in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello.
Sega Master System. I've got heaps of old stuff and GameCubes and all right. Yeah.
So
you know.
Are you into speedrunning?
I got RetroPie.
No, I'm not. I'm not good enough to do that.
No. Like AGDQ, do you watch that?
Yeah, I've watched a few of them. They're pretty impressive, but the amount of cheating that goes on is...
No, it's
glitching and stuff.
It's not cheating. It's taking advantage of something that's in the game. What I really like, my favorite thing is they do it at the winter AGDQ. They do it Awful Games Done Quick. So it's an Awful Games block. Do you ever watch that?
No, I haven't.
It's like some of the
most every year.
Fantastic, terrible games you've ever seen. I saw one that was for the N64. It was called Mohawk and Headphone Jack, I think, and it was, you know, they had the Mode 7 stuff on the N64 where it would like swirl around or whatever, and this guy, every time he would move, the screen would like swirl around him, and it was, I was like motion sick like instantly, and this was like a 34 minute run. It was insane. Love watching.
If you guys really like retro games, I installed RetroPie on my Raspberry Pi and uploaded just like, I think it was something like 30 gigs. I forget, it was some ridiculous amount of games. Like, and I played all my favorite games, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Honestly, that game makes you a racist if you play that as a kid because you have to beat every single nationality. I overcame it.
Doesn't make you a racist, makes you a nationalist because you're fighting for your country.
Bullshit. First of all, France is the weakest country because he's the first guy that you play, Glass Joe. Then you play a Russian. Then you play an Asian. Then you play who else? Then you play, like, I think King Hippo. Now you hate fat people. And then, I mean, you just go through everything, and you end up hating everyone. But I overcame it, and I love everyone.
I think you're projecting, Dave. I think you've got a lot
Go play the game.
You
get angry. You get angry at the Indian guy. You get angry at the Russian guy, you know?
Yeah. That's a fun game.
You gotta play Super Punch.
Super what?
Super Punch Out. The one that came out for Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Is that where you're like wireframe and you can see through your arms and stuff? That one?
No, that was for... I think that was like that VR console where everything was in red. This one's just like Punch Out, but they've got like super moves and stuff.
Mm.
It's updated graphics. I've played...
So top Nintendo game, I would say Super Mario Brothers 3. I think that's the best NES game of all time. And then I also like Mario Brothers 2 and Kickle Cubicle. I think are classics. You ever played those?
Hello. What about Metroid? Metroid was awesome.
I love Super Metroid, and I love Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo. It's really good as well.
Yeah.
Those
are great games.
Metroid, I never had the patience for that. It's just so
yeah,
involved.
You had to figure out how to fall. That was the part. God. And then Missy Elliott comes out with a video where she's dressed up as the Metroids. That was kind of cool. I thought that was awesome. Yeah.
Baller. Anyway, Thrift hates Mazda. Why do you have such a hatred of things, Thrift? I don't understand it.
I make one comment on an Ars Technica article about Mazda, and everybody thinks I hate them.
Such a hater, dude.
We just for a bit of background, a few years ago we bought a brand new Mazda 3, and about 2 years later we started having major rust problems with it. And took it back to the dealer, and the dealer's like, it's not rust. And we're like, it's rust. And they're like, no, it's not. And they just dragged it out for another year, and then the warranty ran out and we kind of sold it. But kind of gave me a pretty bad impression of Mazdas and their customer service. But mechanically it was fine, it was just rust issues. Okay. And I was comparing it against my 2003 Nissan, which was indestructible, lived outside near the ocean for 10 odd years and was fine. No rust at all.
I love how you say the name of cars.
Yeah, I know.
Nissan.
And Mazda.
They actually, Mazda did a recall in Canada over the same issue, but it didn't make it anywhere else in the world, so
Vindication for you there?
Yeah, that's right.
Just because you mentioned... Just because you mentioned Mazda, I just want to say that there is a really cool project that I don't know if I'm ever going to do it. I mean, it sounds like a fantasy, but a cool project to do with my son when he gets old enough to drive. There is a project or a kit car, you could call it, where you take a Mazda Miata and you use that as the donor car, and you take all the parts out of that car and you put it into this thing called the Exomotive Exoset. And if you go to exomotive.com/exoset, that's E-X-O-C-E-T, you can see that people are actually, they sell you a kit. It's a frame with a couple of body panels and whatnot, and you get a Mazda Miata donor. You rip all the parts out of there, put it into this frame kit, and then you have yourself a street legal race car. And it's just really cool. I mean, it's not very practical because there's no windshield, there's no hood over you, there's no place to put cup holders or anything. It's strictly a race track car. Yeah,
you know, I think it's even better than that is I saw this, I can't remember if it was a Reddit or what, but it's this group of guys who take shitty cars, like old Civics, and then they take everything out they can, and then they like take the front bumper off and they like make new duct tape bumpers. And the idea is to see how much gas mileage you can get out of your car. And so they just, I mean, they look like trash, but these guys are getting like 70 miles per gallon out of like a, I mean, theoretically stock vehicle. They're not modifying the engines. It's just they cut all of the weight out of this. It's basically a gas can, a seat belt. I guess most of the roll cage is probably still intact, but it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that's pretty much the Exoset. You should go to the website. It's a fun thing to fantasize about if you're a car guy like me. And if you really want to spend money, there's something called Aerial Atom, which is like a fully built. You know, you place an order, they send it to you. I think it's something like $60,000, but it's already beat like some of the higher end Corvettes. It's fun to watch those videos on YouTube. See how this little nothing just zips by everything and can handle. It's pretty cool. Something to look at.
And hits the wall and explodes into a million pieces.
No, well, and there's Cox.
Danger but racing.
We've got the Australians in full effect.
Yay.
I think Cox froze up.
That's a great base to freeze up on.
Man, we must just have a crappy connection to Australia today because both of you guys keep kind of tweaking out every now and then.
They're surrounded by, you know, water in terms of wetness.
More likely to be the internal connectivity in the country is pretty average.
Such is life. All right.
It's the wettest country in terms of water.
Well, do you guys have any other things burning a hole in your pocket you need to talk about?
No, that's good.
Looking forward to the mom, scared shit and happy at the same time. Giving speeches is always a little bit stressful for me. I have that anxiety where I think, you know, someone in the crowd is just going to stand up and say, "You're wrong." And I'm going to be like, how do I not be a dick at this point? You know?
Well, good. I'll be that guy. I'll be happy to be that guy for you, Dave.
I hope I'll be that guy.
tell them to hold their questions till the end of the presentation.
Yeah, you've had to do that, right?
Yeah. I have, yeah.
Oh. All right, so let's do, now that Cox is here, do you have anything that you'd like to add? Let's close it off. No, he doesn't because he locked up. he just mic dropped me, I think. I think that's what happened. All right, Drifty, you have a new occupation, correct?
I do. So I now work for a vendor. I work for an American company called Fortinet, who do network security and many other different things. Yeah.
All right, so you're an SE, right?
Yeah, so I'm a systems engineer or sales engineer for them. I basically go out and meet with customers and I guess listen to their requirements and try and fit the right product to what they're trying to do, or convince them to use our products, the other thing I have to do as well. So, yeah, it's quite a fun job. I really enjoy it.
That's cool.
Actually, I know a lot about Fortinet. I was a gold reseller years ago on the Northeast. I think before they went public, I'm not sure, because I used to speak to the people at Fortinet directly. Now we just can't. And now I'm a Microtech guy.
I've worked for them before, previously, before they went public as well, but it's like a completely different company now. They actually have structure and money and things, which they didn't have before they went public.
Their product is awesome. I mean, if anybody ever asks me, you know, what router should I use for UTMing and layer 7 filtering, I just tell them right away Fortinet, you know. But if they don't need that, I say Microtech.
All right, 3D.
Then they're like, huh?
So if people were, say, wanting to get a hold of you, how would they go about that?
Best way is still via Facebook. I'm on most of the WISP groups, or you can add me on LinkedIn as well. I'm just on LinkedIn as Andrew Thrift, and yeah, I'll be happy to talk to you.
Baller. All right. Dave, if you wanted people to get a hold of you out on the internet, what's the best way of doing that?
On the internet, well, then email david@pennytone.com. You could also give me a buzz, 855-PENNYTONE. So I'm here.
Gotcha.
Cool.
Nick, whenever you're not plundering villages and firing the cannons at other ships, how would people get a hold of you?
Well, the Little Brothers Wisp Slack would be great if more people get involved with that. I also have a website with not much on it, and it's my last name, which is arellano.io, and that has my email and stuff like that if anyone for some reason wants to get a hold of me.
Oh,
I'm pretty quiet online, so.
I don't know. You're always popping in with the answer at just the right time. And Thrift gets it 99% of the rest of the time. He's got all the answers. So between the two of you, we're pretty much set. If you want to get a hold of me, greg@gregsoul.com, or contact us at The Brothers Wisp if you have any questions or comments, facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. That's mostly Mikey when you see stuff popping up there. So big thanks to Mike. I think he tried to covertly ask other people to post stuff, and obviously nobody else is doing it. So again, that's just Mike. He's just taking care of that. So you can hit us through there, through the email. Again, send me your 5 tips, because I find that interesting. I love talking to new people and finding all the interesting ways you guys go about doing your day-to-day. So thank you guys for being on the cast. Thank you, Thrift. Thank you, Nick, especially. Dave, you're kind of okay. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see all the rest of you later.
We talk about equipment
later.
And methodology, so sit back and start learning. Lighting up the towers so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, cause fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.